Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program, and editor-in-chief of Chicken Whisperer magazine. Today is Thursday, February 20th, and I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, I welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com. Do you provide a heat source for your backyard chickens in the winter? In most cases, it's not necessary. But if you choose to provide a heat source for your backyard chickens, it's imperative to use a safe and effective heat source, and the only one I recommend is the Sweeter Heater. The Sweeter Heater is a safe, completely sealed, washable, non-breakable, energy-efficient, long-lasting, and reliable specific area heater that comes with a 3-year warranty. Ditch the dangerous heat lamp this season and invest in the only heater I recommend, the Sweeter Heater. Purchase the Sweeter Heater online at sweeterheater.com. That's sweeterheater.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We have a fabulous show lined up for you today. It, of course, is the second Thursday of February, and we've got poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McCrae, Ph.D. She's going to be joining us. It is her assigned day, and today's topic, very interesting. I'm kind of anxious to hear what it all is going to pertain to, but we've got, where is it? I had it right in front of me. Bird calls, bird sounds, and the bird brain, I think it is. Here it is. Yep. What a memory. Bird calls, bird songs, and the bird brain is today's topic with poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McCrae. So, gotta love that. Stay tuned. She'll be joining us here shortly, and we'll get right to our topic at hand. So, gotta love them. I'm really curious to see about what all that's going to in detail. But it is our last broadcast of the week, and we are going to have a busy Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We've been down here in the South Florida area enjoying the winter for the last 4 months, and at this time, unfortunately, with a heavy heart, having to leave. We've met a lot of great friends here and a lot of great people. The weather has been fabulous, and we're heading up to Atlanta on Monday. Well, actually, we're going to stop by the homestead and lighten our load considerably for our big book tour. But we'll be at the homestead for less than 20 hours, then we'll head on up to Atlanta. We'll be there as a kind of a landing station for about 10 days while we gear up and get some things done for the long tour that we're going to have. But next Thursday, hopefully you've signed up for the live national broadcast webinar, which will be taking place next Thursday, February 27th at CDC headquarters in Atlanta. That will be myself, Dr. Barton Baravesh, and Dr. Joanne, I can't ever remember her last name, Quinn, with the USDA, and we've got a great webinar planned for you. We're going to have a lot of new topics this year, and this is all celebrating a Healthy Bird Week, which is that last week in February. So hopefully you signed up now full. We posted that on our Facebook page for several weeks, and so it is now full, but don't worry, it will be archived for your listening pleasure, just like this radio show is, and you can be found it on the USDA APHIS website once it's done. I'll let you know and post links once it's archived if you didn't get to sign up to be able to participate live. So then it's Thursday. And then, of course, after that, we'll be hitting the road for the Tractor Supply Power to the Poultry Book Tour. Each event includes a book signing, an hour and a half, getting started with Backyard Poultry Workshop, Q&A session, pictures, autographs, things like that. Looking forward to that. And, wow, we have a lot of stops. We're going to be in and about the following towns. Let's see, we got Mobile, Alabama. Let's see, we're going to be going through Louisiana, Lake Charles, Louisiana. This is by memory. Beaumont, Texas, College Station, Texas, Waco, Texas, Mesquite, Texas. We'll be in Oklahoma City. We're going to be in Wichita. We're going to be in Kansas City. We're going to be in Columbia, Missouri. We're going to be in Indianapolis, Indiana, Louisville, Kentucky, Knoxville, Tennessee, and Fort Oglethorpe, Georgia, which is just outside of Chattanooga. More people know about, I guess where Chattanooga's at. But we have an awesome event in Indianapolis. It's going to be so much fun. I have rented the Chicken Limo for a big event up there. If you haven't seen it, go to chickenlimo.com. Yes, it's a bright yellow stretch limo with a big chicken on the roof, and pretty cool for us crazy chicken folks. And five lucky winners are going to win a night on the town with the Chicken Whisperer and my lovely family. We'll have, of course, myself, my wife, and my son and daughter, and that leaves five seats left in the stretch limo. We've already awarded one winner. We had a contest, I guess, the night before last. We had a winner, and they get to have dinner and a limo ride night on the town with yours truly. So we're going to have another contest tonight. We'll get winner number two, and we'll have a total of five winners And I think what's going to happen, I'm not real sure, but I think what's going to happen is right after the event in Indianapolis, we'll have the chicken limo pull right up in front of the Tractor Supply store. We'll all hop in and Zoom. We'll head out to dinner and then get a little tour through Indy. So looking forward to that. And that's going to be a really, really a fun time. So got that going on. And it's back to the homestead for a little bit while. One more big announcement. We've got Chicken Whisperer magazine is going to be launched here very, very soon. Very proud of that. Running around like a chicken with my head cut off, no pun intended. It's just been crazy editing this, editing that, approving pictures. I got to make a video for the digital edition. And if you have not already, you can subscribe to that for free. The digital edition is free if you'd like. If you're kind of hands-on, love just you know, the touchy-feely of a magazine delivered to your door, you can order that too. It's just $9.95, less than $10 for tons of invaluable information from the Poultry Dream Team of contributors. We really raised the bar for this publication. I feel like it's going to blow the others away with content, it's just going to be pretty awesome. I really think you're going to enjoy it and our contributors and the information we're going to deliver, and you won't have to worry about the information showing up on our episode called Blogbusters, where we debunk a lot of information that's out there on blogs and forums. So it's going to be good information, quality information, scientific information for you. We've got a great list of contributors we're calling our Poultry Dream Team, and that's going to be coming out probably around the 15th, somewhere between the 7th and 15th of March will be the first issue, spring 2014, and I will have these magazines available on the tour. I'm getting 1,000, which will be delivered to my first stop on the tour in Mobile. And everybody that attends will get one. And by the way, if you're in the Indianapolis, Indiana area and are looking at trying to win that contest, talked to Tractor Supply yesterday, and they're looking at trying to get together a little fun goodie bag prize package that everybody that wins that contest will get, maybe some TSC hats and some other fun stuff for a little kind of, what do you call it when you go to a birthday party and you get the little bag? Anyway. I'm not really into all that. So anyway, so a little fun bag full of goodies that you get when you go to kids' birthday parties. And grab bag. I guess grab bag, fun bag, whatever it's called. Anywho, so that'll be fun for those winners in that event. So nonetheless, so that's what's going on around here. And there will not be a show this coming Monday. We will be on the road, Tuesday. It's going to be real spotty here, but I will let you know on Facebook kind of when we'll be broadcasting. Some broadcasts may be in the evening, but I know we'll be on the road Tuesday. I know that Wednesday I have a rehearsal at CDC. Thursday I have the big event. I may broadcast my radio show from the CDC. Just go down there and do my radio show, and then right after the radio show do the webinar. We'll see. But I want to make sure I do as many shows as I can while I'm on the road. Keep things somewhat regular, and even when we're on the road, we may be broadcasting from a Tractor Supply store, maybe from a sponsor here or there, maybe broadcasting live from Ideal Poultry out in Cameron, Texas, maybe Crazy K Farm, makers of the Hen Saver Hen Apron, maybe at the Coop Company, Irvin Coop Company out there near Austin, Texas. So we're going to try to broadcast while we're on the road. We also going to try to make some videos and post them on a YouTube channel, let you know what we're doing. And I'm still waiting to hear back from the production company out in L.A. if they're going to send the film crew out and film some of this for our pilot episode of the Chicken Whisperer show. So we'll see how all that pans out. All right, enough of that blah, blah, blah. We're ready to get over here to the phone lines and bring on our good friend. You all love her. She is awesome. And she is now tenured. Yes, you heard that right. Let's give her a big, warm welcome, Dr. Bridget McCray.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, welcome. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I heard today through the grapevine that you dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's for your art, at least one article that we have coming out in Chicken Whisperer magazine, and all that's done. Thank goodness. So, but I think they still have to, in fact, I was told to the guy who's doing a lot of the editing that he'll just kind of, he said, look out, because the way he works is you'll just get like 10 all at once. instead of getting them kind of gradually, so you may get the other one. And two great articles, folks, I posted on Facebook from Dr. McRae. We've got one kind of all about coops, choosing the right coop. And really cool about this article is some things you just probably never thought about when that you need to incorporate in picking a coop for your backyard or building a coop. And then also a really neat article on pastured poultry, comparing a couple of popular breeds and what those eggs really end up costing you. So that's kind of, some of those numbers are going to shock some people. So it's very good articles from Dr. McRae. But today I'm very anxious, and of course, whether you did it on purpose or not, when I sent you that email this morning, I was really kind of grasping for some more specific information. Curiosity killed the cat about today's topic, but that's okay. We'll all learn together and be surprised and explain what all this is about. Bird songs and bird the bird brain and all that good stuff. So we're folks, just I'm telling you, get your little notebooks out because you're going to want to write some of this information down that Dr. McRae is going to share with us.
Sorry about that, Andy. I was logging into your page.
No, that's okay. It's kind of, you know, I noticed that the last week's segment got kind of bled over into this one, so I kind of got that. But then I was like, hey,
no, that was me copying and pasting very poorly.
No problem. And then I thought, well, this could be, I mean, just from reading, I was like, okay, we're going to talk about the different sounds that they make and communication that they do with each other. Or are we going to talk about, you know, and then the brain and how they think when they communicate? So, I was just going all over the board. Trying to, in my mind, thinking, what is today going to be about, or is it just going to be a neat, fun episode? So I'm chomping at the bit to hear
my first degree was in avian sciences, and so this is one of the things you learn in avian sciences. You get a little taste of song and how the brain works and physiology, and you get it in different classes depending on what you take and what track you're kind of following and what interests you. But I find bird song and learning really interesting. And so, you know, coming to the PhD program at Auburn with an avian scientist background and this particular interest in not just chickens but a lot of birds, I gave a presentation one time. Because as a graduate student, you have to give a presentation, I think, three times during your if you're a graduate student, it's three times. I think it's twice if you're a master's degree student. And so I decided that I was going to expand people's horizons in the poultry science department and talk about bird brains. And so this is the talk that I gave. And, you know, of course, you can't see the PowerPoint, but in the talk there's things like sonograms in there and, you know, different things like that. But, you know, if I ever give this talk again, it's really kind of fun. There's good books out there. There's some publications by Luis Baptista, B-A-P-T-I-S-T-A, Luis, L-U-I-S. From the California Academy of Sciences. He did a lot of work with song sparrows or sparrows in the San Francisco Bay Area, which, you know, brought it home to me because that's kind of where I grew up, a little bit to the south, but still. But when our birds, humans, and environment class, before he passed away, I had the opportunity to hear him speak, I believe, three times. And my job once was to go get him a can of soda before he started his talk, because he literally needed to wet his whistle because he could look at the sonogram on the screen and whistle that tune. He could sing it. He was that good. And he, you know, depending on which one, you know, he knew where that bird was in the Bay Area based upon the song because he did the research. So he could look at a sonogram and sing or whistle that tune, and he was just so good. And so that when you see someone who's that good and so excited about what they do, of course it's going to get you interested. But let's talk about a little bit of correlation here about birdsong and human speech, because a lot of what we've learned about birdsong and about human speech has come from when the brain doesn't work properly. We know when everything works properly, we know kind of what the brain looks like, but when someone has a stroke or has a lesion in their brain and a certain part of the brain has a problem, it's basically what they can't do that teaches us what that part of the brain is supposed to do. So, you know, we talk about the normal signal repertoire. That's what we say, how we speak, what the birds say, how they sing. It relies upon four things. Auditory perception, so having ears helps. Perception, memorization, and imitation. And as your young ones are growing up or as your baby chicks come in this year, I hope that you can kind of pick apart what we're going to talk about today and see if you can see some of this process taking place in your brooders, or if you've got little ones, your little human children are, you know, they're basically perceiving sounds, associating them with certain actions or reactions, and then attempting to memorize followed by imitate to see if they can elicit the same response. So
the first thing that comes to mind with that is whenever we are hatching fertile eggs and hatching chicks, whatnot, that maybe day, you know, 20, day 19, when we first hear the baby chick inside the shell, even before they may have pipped out, their little their song, if you will, and Jen would always whistle back and start this kind of like, whether it was she would start a conversation, if you will, with them, and they would seem to on several occasions whistle back, and they hear her and whistle, and then they would whistle back. So she has a lot of fun with that, and I find it pretty cute myself to see the interaction between her and the chicks even before they hatch out of the shell.
And that's some of the most innate things. Those are hardwired sounds. They haven't necessarily had the length of time, even, you know, before they hatch out, to learn other sounds and attempt other sounds. So the sounds that they're making at the very beginning are what they're hardwired to make. Then eventually they get into acquiring different sounds that occurs in early life. They have a sensitive period where they really learn a lot. And, of course, as a guide, there are predispositions for certain sounds so that, you know, chickens don't go around, may I have some grape poupon, you know. No, they're predisposed for, you know, squawk, squawk.
I would love to know what they're saying, because anybody who's ever had a brooder with day-old baby chicks and they get cold,
yeah,
they will let you know about it. I'm telling you, it's just when we've had, like, when we were doing big chick giveaways in Atlanta, we had like 800 chicks, 1,000 chicks delivered in a 3-day period. And even when we would order 100 at a time, if, you know, when we get them all into their brooders in our one sunroom, and lo and behold, they, you know,
they're screaming.
They get cold, and just the noise, that is just kind of
deafening.
Who would have thought these tiny little chicks could make so much noise? I wonder what they're saying, because they all seem to have the same tune at that point, which seems to be saying,
at that point,
I'm
they're just
cold,
practicing.
Mama.
And, you know, eventually going to change. The amount of sounds they're going to make, and they're going to change. And we're not talking just baby chicks. We're talking all birds. So we're heading into springtime. That robin that makes a nest in the tree outside your kitchen window, you know, that young bird is going to have to learn to sing so that it gets some vocal expertise. So there's three types of learning as a bird progresses into song, okay? You've got subsong, plastic song, and crystallized song. So subsong, that's just, think of it as a baby's babbling, okay? What comes out of their beaks is specific to their species, all right? Plastic song is the learning phase. the amount of time a bird spends in plastic song is going to change depending on what species it is and where it is in the world. There might be some birds on one side of the Grand Canyon that take a little longer than the other side of the Grand Canyon. So sometimes there's just differences in location. Then you've got crystallized song. That's when they're done playing around with different types of song, and they reject certain sounds that they have been playing around with in favor of something that suits them or their species. This also, for male birds, can correspond with an uptick in their testosterone levels. How long it takes them to work into crystallized song, again, that changes and is different for each bird species. So let's go back to subsong. The little tiny birds that are falling out of the nest and is screaming at you or screaming for mom, either saying, get away from me, or mom, mom, where are you? You know, that's the young bird that's still in subsong. They're basically training their voice box. They're training their vocal apparatus so they can actually make the right sounds. And if they're not making noise, they're not going to train their vocal cords to do the right thing. And, well, not vocal cords, I'm sorry, don't have vocal cords like we do. They have a syrinx, which is down inside their chest cavity. So you know how we have vocal cords up in our neck? Well, that's not where it is for a bird. It's down where the two bronchi split, and that's down deep in their cavity. I get calls from people, I want to debark my chicken. Well, that's not going to work. It's not the same as a dog. It's not the same as a human. Sorry. The other thing that they're working on in subsong is sensorimotor control. So can I make this sound when I want to make this sound? So they've got to improve their control at that time. That's why they're making so much noise outside your kitchen window, bedroom window, fill-in-the-blank window. And then occasionally, depending on what bird species it is, sometimes they're practicing the two-voice sound production. Sometimes they can make kind of two sounds at once. Some species have that capability, and they have to perfect that. And so they're just trying things out and trying to see where it takes them. Next, you've got plastic song. And that's a gradual change in what song they put out. Mm-hmm. They usually move towards a more stereotyped vocalization. They're going to increase the number of syllables that they make, the number of phrases that they create. They're also going to change their vocal amplitude, so how often they make a certain chirp and how loud it is. They're also going to create patterns, and they're also going to increase their repertoire size. They are listening very carefully to the world around them. They're going to take sounds. Perhaps they may even mimic a fellow species sound. But they get noticeably louder. you think of it as they're working in notes and syllables that develop first, and then they create syntax out of that. What arrangement they put those notes and syllables in, that's still going to change in plastic song. Do they chirp and then trill, or do they trill and then chirp and then buzz? That's still going to change a little bit in this plastic song stage. Then you've got crystallized song. Crystallized song is a very short jump from plastic song. Again, we talked about its relationship to testosterone production. That's when the song freezes. It decreases in length sometimes. It loses its diversity. The structure of the singing actually changes. It usually gets, selective. They're going to cull out certain parts of the song and assemble a typical species song for their area. So they usually sing and then short silent intervals, and that is what becomes their crystallized song. So a lot of people have listened to birds for many years, and you kind of wonder how all this takes place. And they've come up with something called the auditory template hypothesis. They said, you know, based upon many, 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 many research trials, there's inherent predisposition towards certain types of song patterns. The pattern select, that's where the birds actually preferentially acquire the song models of their fellow bird species, or what's called their conspecifics. So a sparrow in your region is going to listen to the sparrows of the same species. So a white-crowned sparrow is going to sound different from a song sparrow. So the white-crowned sparrow is going to learn from other white-crowned sparrows.
Mm-hmm.
And they can tell what a song sparrow sounds like, and that's not one of their conspecifics. They're going to be like, yeah, no, that's not what I'm going to listen to. There is something called a sensitive phase, and this is very important. The sensitive phase takes place in the first year, and that's when they're receptive to song stimulation. It is seasonal, and it is age-related, and it's associated with the time that they're fledging or leaving the nest. So something that's called a closed-ended learner is age-limited. There's other open-ended learners where they're always learning, but a closed-ended learner is going to be one that once it reaches a certain age, they're done learning.
You can't teach an old dog new tricks.
You can't teach an old sparrow a new song.
there you go.
So there are social influences, of course. They've got to have a tutor. Usually that's the father bird or a flock member. If they're a group of birds, it might be birds in their territory. So if they're like group nesters, it might be birds in their territory. But they usually get parental care by the potential tutor who teaches them. And they've done experiments where they've taken and hatched out birds and put a different tutor in there, and you know, they get different responses depending on the situation and when the tutor is introduced and, you know, how receptive is this species versus that species and picking up what the tutor says, and do they reject it all, and then the song that's for their own species. Lots of work has been done on bird song. So taking a look at a bird's singing repertoire, where do you learn your song from? There's song sharing or repertoire sharing. Usually there's no dispersion of the species. It's phylopatric, tending to remain in one site. That's what phylopatric means. They stick with their species. A lot of times if you, like, say, take a not a mockingbird, that's a bad example. Take a parrot that hasn't been around humans and doesn't mimic humans, and you put it as the tutor for a song sparrow. Pretty much the song sparrow's going to listen and take in, but it's going to try to make the sounds for a song sparrow after a while, because they don't really share so much what the parrot shares. Now, we know parrots are good at improvising and picking up sound and making new syllables, and some of them sound like human speech. There is a time when birds try to improvise. They take new combinations and learn material, or sometimes they create their own songs. It's an eventual variation. It's an eventual change. But some of these bird species are rather good at immediate changes to their song repertoire. I don't know if any of your listeners have ever seen that Life of Birds video, mm-hmm. where you have the superb lyrebird. Oh, let me tell you, that is a cool bird. Because it'll take the 20 songs from the forest around it, 20 bird songs, and try to create and mix and match as many combinations and as long of a song as possible, including human-made sounds like a car alarm, to try to bring a female in. Now, that is a bird that has immediate variation. Something like a song sparrow's not going to have many improvisations once you've gone into crystallized song. So it depends on the bird species that you're working with. Now let's focus on chickens. Let's get back to chickens. When we talk about chicken vocalization, learning doesn't play as much of a role. They are kind of solid, up to 18 calls in their repertoire. And that 18 calls plus the rooster's making his crowing sound. Most of those sounds are alarm calls, food calls, and contact calls. As we know, food calls are sounds like, cluck, cluck, cluck. Alarm calls can be, if it's a ground predator, it's a cluck, cluck, cluck. Uh-huh. If it's an aerial predator, it's kind of a high-pitched scream. Contact calls are more of a, sometimes they can be purring sounds, sometimes they can be, it can be a cluck cluck sound. But you've got aerial predator sounds. If you ever hear your birds make that sound, look up. It's kind of a high-pitched sound. Versus if it's a ground predator, the chicken's going, get away, get away, get away, cluck, 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 cluck. And it's usually rapid and urgent sounding. Broody hens produce a lot of prolactin, and so that sound that she makes when she wants you to get away from her nest that she's sitting on, sometimes that's a high-pitched whistle, but it's not the same as the alarm call with an aerial predator. Sometimes there's clucking involved, too. And usually followed by pecking at your hand. Then you've got breeding season male calls, which we all know is the age-old cock-a-doodle-doo. You've got a choice to make. If you're making sounds and you're a chicken and you're a prey item, you've got a choice. Do I make a sound on possibly open myself up to attack from something that didn't know previously that I was in the area? So there's, a cost risk assessment there, vulnerability. Or do I communicate with my neighbors and say, yes, I'm still alive, this is still my territory? So there's, do you open yourself up to that kind of vulnerability? Then you've got the amount of active space that you have to work in. Now, chickens are birds of the jungle, and birds of the jungle have to make enough noise for it to penetrate through the jungle cover. You've got background noises. Jungles are not quiet places. And then there's things that can reflect your sound back to you, like plants, objects, tree trunks. So in order to get that sound to travel far, you have to decrease the pitch. So your rooster going cock-a-doodle-doo and you can hear it miles away, that's on purpose. That's to make sure the message is heard. Chicken doesn't know it's not in the forest anymore if it's here in Delaware. It's going to do what it's been trained to do. So if you look at alarm calls, like a hawk is flying overhead, chickens will lower the pitch and try to increase the amount of space, get away from whatever it is that's causing them to be alarmed. It has an abrupt start but a faded ending. Wild birds, you know, just like chickens, they're going to head for cover. They have a high pitch, just similar. There's no sudden breaks. They begin and end smoothly, but it's used sparingly, and that's because they don't want the hawk to be able to see them when they make that call. If you're going to take the chance and alert everyone in the community that there is a hawk nearby, you don't want to then become the target, because not only can you be heard by your fellow birds, but you can be heard by the predator. So it's a vulnerability issue. You have to make that decision. And so, you know, some people, that's exactly why they have roosters, so that that rooster, they don't mind if that rooster is taken out by making that alarm call. I'm not saying that they'll always be taken out, but you understand.
Yeah.
Contact calls are usually brief calls. They're repeated. And they change in frequency depending on the situation. Contact calls for chickens have a decreased pitch. They're louder within earshot. The frequency is fairly high. What they're trying to elicit is countercalling. Like a mother hen, if she does a roosting call to her chicks, she's saying, come to me now, it's time to roost. Please join me. That's a contact call. If anyone has grown up on the West Coast and has heard California calls, you'll hear the male sometimes do that little chiquita call to his females and his covey. And that's what kind of sounds like, chiquita, chiquita, chiquita. And he does a lot of separation calls because he usually has a fair number of hens in his covey. If anybody's had bobwhite quail, there's really kind of three calls: loud, soft, and a loud roosting call. And so those are the, you know, roosting calls. You hear those in the morning. You hear them in the evening. And that's mainly to tell the neighboring coveys, the neighboring birds, hey, I survived the night, I still sound healthy, and this is still my territory. No action need be taken to move in on your part. So there you go. That's kind of what that means. Looking at food calls and behavior, poultry, most poultry, that's not saying that people don't have individual hens that behave differently. There's active sharing when a cache of food is found. You let everybody know, hey, there's a bunch of food over here, so everybody can come over and participate in that food opportunity. In the breeding season, you've got males, and they make something called a tidbitting call. If anybody has a rooster, you may have seen this. It's when he'll pick up in an exaggerated manner, he'll pick up and drop either a piece of food or a non-food item like a stick or a rock, something easy for him to pick up and drop repeatedly. The whole time he's kind of going, and that is really enticing to a female, so that he's basically calling her over. And that's also something you'll see a mother hen doing when she's trying to teach her chicks what food and non-food items are. But for the male, when he's making that call, what he's doing is calling the females over, and then he jumps on them and breeds them. So some females learn to not pay attention to those calls anymore, especially if they're consistently taken advantage of in said
I'm
manner.
I'm not falling for that anymore.
Yeah. And so sometimes you might see your rooster do it to you. And then they may attack you. I don't know. Your rooster may be different from some of the roosters I grew up with. Then the female mate selection, it's really not based on the rate of food calling with objects, because she remembers how often he makes that call. And you may, in your shed, in your coop, you may see wood shavings being used by the males for curiosity purposes to get the females to come over, or they may pick up a feather and make that. And then, you know, you've got the audience effect. If you put food in front of a hen, she's going to make calls, and that'll increase the food calling rate. She'll call everyone over for an audience and work as a group. Raising chicks, you've got sound stimulus, visual stimulus, exaggerated movements to help chicks figure out what food is, what water is. We talked about crowing and territory dominance. It is somewhat seasonal, although you may not agree that when your rooster sounds off at 3:30 in the morning and it's middle of December, he's not confused. He might have heard something that just woke him up. It tends, not consistent though, as we all realize, tends to bond with sunrise and sunset. The reason why you hear a lot of birds in the morning singing is because of heat and sound waves. When it's nice and cool in the morning, sound travels farther. So as heat starts to build during the day, it prevents sound waves from traveling as far or as clearly. So that's why you have, if you live near a forest, that's why you hear so many birds singing in the morning, because that's the best time to really advance your position, saying, hey, this is still my territory, or hey, I'm looking for a mate, or hey, I'm still alive.
But in the forest, if a tree falls and no one's there, does it really make noise?
The age-old question, right?
There's the question.
So when we talk about health and sound, birds use sounds to communicate a lot of information. And the way a bird sounds as it sings is very important and is a cue to the opposite sex or other birds as to the bird's health. So there's usually four notes in the traditional cock-a-doodle-doo sound for a chicken. If a bird is in poor health, they're going to have an increased amount of time spent between crows. That's called the pre-call interval. If a male is in poor health, they're going to have a decreased fourth note. So if a rooster goes cock-a-doodle-doo versus a rooster that goes cock-a-doodle-doo. So if he decreases that fourth note, he's not in terrific health. And sometimes if they're really in poor health, they'll just skip one of the notes altogether. And so that's a way for the male to communicate his health without even intending to do so.
Now, if he does that and there happens to be multiple roosters in the flock, would the other roosters pick up on that and say,
mm-hmm. Yes,
there's
it does.
There's an opportunity now for me to move up in the pecking order.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
You got it. Or if there is no other male in the harem, a neighboring rooster might try to take over the territory. Or females may leave that male for another harem. So female preference is part of the scenario. Not only does the female look at the male and look at how healthy he is, his feather quality, you know, is he good size, has he got plenty of food in his territory, you know, how healthy is he, but females prefer males that have high-intensity displays, that have increased display rates, that have a large comb, redder irises, redder hackles, yellower saddle feathers. That tends to be what the female's looking for, at least in the red jungle fowl or birds that are closely related. Now, if you've got one male for that female to choose from, she doesn't get to make preference. You're making that choice for her.
Take it or leave it, baby.
Females prefer to crouch for a male that waltzes or does a rear approach versus one that you know, jumps on her from the front direction. Low-ranking females will correspondingly increase their crouch rate and increase their approaches to tidbitting males. So a high-ranking female is going to be more selective in when she crouches or how many times she approaches the male due to his tidbitting. Like I said, low-ranking females will increase their crouch rate and increase their approaches to tidbitting. And then it's the male's decision. Depending on how frequently that female comes to him, will he continue to breed her? So, you know, depending on the size of your flock, you might be able to see some of these dynamics going on out in the coop. And for a health preference, the female does like to use ornamental traits versus non-ornamental traits. They're mostly visual, but that doesn't mean sound doesn't come into play. Let's see, how are we doing on time? We're good.
We're doing fine. Yep, no problem. And, you know, I can take a commercial break now. I typed in the chat room. I was like, you know, if you think about this, some of these things that you're describing, it's like you think about this, some of this can kind of carries over to us humans as well, you know, very much so. It just might be a fancier car versus a bright red comb or, you know, you know, it's just, you know, just you listen to what Dr. McRae is saying, and you can kind of bring that over to the human side and translate it to make it kind of a
pertinent. Certain things have parallels, don't they?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, absolutely. So cool information. So we're going to go to commercial break, and there'll be a lot more of this when we come back. Very, very fascinating information, and we may have some questions for as well. If you do have a question for Dr. McRae, then please, you can post it in the chat room, post it in all caps. And if you happen to be listening via telephone, if you do have a question regarding this particular topic, you can press 1, and that will let me know that you have a question for Dr. Bray. So stay with us, folks. We'll be back right after this short break.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Our guest today, of course, is poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD. We're talking about really all about, you know, how the chicken thinks and the bird brain, how they communicate. Very interesting information. Before we get back, I also want to share with you guys the providers of the Ultimate Chicken Coop Contest for February, the company that's providing both the grand prize package coop and the second place prize coop is Urban Coop Company. You can find them online, urbancoopcompany.com, and two wonderful. They have the round top chicken coop, which is a really unique design. And then they have the Belfry, which is more like a chicken tractor. That's the second place prize that you can move around the yard or have it stationary if you choose to. But very unique designs, very creative thinking went into designing these coops, and we get a lot of great comments on our Facebook page. So I wanted to let everybody know that Urban Coop Com was the provider of these two coops. So maybe you can visit them at their Facebook page or send them over an email and thank them for providing us just the coops. They have a custom carved name board. You can have it say anything you want, Carol's Cluckers or whatever. Whatever you want to be carved on the coop. Professionally, it looks really good. And they both include an extended run and lots of extra bonuses and upgrades to their coop. So I got to love that. So I wanted to get that out there for all of us as well. Now time to bring back poultry scientist Professor Dr. McRae.
I took a look at these coops that you're talking about online. Kind of cute.
Kind of neat, yeah, absolutely.
You could paint them any color you wanted. If you wanted a pink chicken coop, you could do that.
Yep.
So I don't have too much more to go, but let's talk a little bit about memory and socialization. That's part of learning. When you look at a bird, when birds look at each other, the thing that they're going to look at the most is the head and the neck. That's where their recognition really focuses on, is the head and the neck region. And in humans, Andy, do you know where we tend to look the most when we see another human face? Where do our eyes go first?
Are you talking about us males and what we look at? All humans. Okay, I was going to say, because, how many times have we said, excuse me, sir, but my eyes are up here. let's see.
They may not focus on the eyes first, but the eyes usually do go to the eyes first.
Yeah.
So if you were to put a human picture up in front of another human and track where the human eye goes, they usually focus around the eyes first.
Eyes, yeah. Making eye contact is so important, and I've noticed that too, and I've tried to be more of a public figure, meeting a lot of people now, showing respect is when I'm talking. Eye contact is so important, but also, and I noticed this as well, when you go to shake somebody's hand, when I shake their hand, I'm always looking right, and you'd be amazed at how many, and I think I learned this, started doing this when I was reading some studies or saw some studies online about things, and so a lot of people seem to, when they shake your hand, look down or look down at your hand shaking, almost like they're bowing or like almost like a submissive thing versus shaking your hand, a good firm shake, making eye contact while you're doing that when you introduce. And so I've really made try to make a commitment to do that. Firm handshake, making eye contact during the handshake, that type of thing.
That makes a difference.
And, Yeah, it really does when you meet somebody. So versus somebody that just kind of, you know, puts their head down when they shake, like, it's interesting. So yeah, I mean obviously, you know, that makes sense. The eyes.
The chickens really focus on the head and the neck, and that includes the comb. So if you dub a chicken, which means removing the comb, the wattles, and the earlobes, that changes their overall appearance, and they may have to reassort themselves as far as recognition because, you know, a large number of the cues have been removed. Let's go back to the baby chick that we were talking about. We've talked about imprinting in the past and how young birds imprint upon their maternal units, whether it's a mother hen or a human, or like with the sandhill cranes that San Diego Zoo did years ago, or those cranes. You know, they had humans dressed in white with a, kind of a puppet hand, and the birds, you know, were able to associate that as mom. Then the chick, their relationship with the hen, they're stimulated to communicate to the hen when the hen is sitting on the nest and turning those eggs. The chicks do talk to each other inside the shells, inside the nest. It's very low-frequency sounds. That's going to be a different sound than the clicking sound that takes place as they're actually working that egg tooth against the side of the shell. They can tell the difference between those two sounds. And so mom's going to talk to them inside the shell. They're going to talk back. They're going to talk to each other. So hopefully that'll kind of synchronize the hatch. And, you know, more advanced embryos are going to slow down when you get the low-frequency sounds. And then when they start to hear more and more clicking, then some of them realize, hey, I got to develop faster and get out of here. Everybody's starting to hatch. So those sounds do have importance. Mother teaches them about foraging, about perching, how to use their home range. And, you know, perching and foraging, you know, they learn that behavior from moms. For a while, like, say, baby turkeys, they were having a problem with something called starve outs. That was about 20 years ago. That's when they had drinking and foraging behavior problems. And sometimes they would use a chick in the with the baby poults to kind of demonstrate to them how to eat and drink so they could avoid the starve out problem. Then you've got pecking order and social orders of social dominance, hierarchy of dominance. If you're a bird, if you're chicken, you experience aggression from adults, from your contemporaries, your birds of your same age. Dominant birds peck on submissive birds. Usually they peck at the head and the back of the head. Usually you get nailed in the back of the head as you're trying to escape. if the birds are evenly matched, that's when pecking face-to-face occurs. And so those behaviors are kind of key. You know, in small groups like what many of your flock owners experience, those birds remember prior encounters, and they try to avoid those birds that have previously taken a whaling on them. So sometimes if you've got a really small flock, like, say, two or three birds, can't really get away from the bird that's dominant. Aggressive behavior begins at about 2 weeks old. Submissive behavior begins at about 4 weeks old. There is a separate hierarchy for males and females, and that starts at about 6 weeks to 10 weeks of age. And as we know, as we discussed a short time ago, Andy, male hierarchy is very unstable. They can be usurped at any time. Now let's talk about the commercial industry. Laying hen operations. Birds are kept in cages, right? So inside each cage, you've got a certain number of hens, and there is always one dominant hen. That's usually been called the despot, okay? The dominant hen is called the despot. She prevents aggressive interactions between any of the other birds. One of the other things the cage prevents is head-raising posture. So that can help keep the birds a little bit calmer. Nobody can raise their head higher than anybody else, so that helps keep them a little bit more mellow. Turkeys, because I know some of your listeners have turkeys, Andy, there is a slight delay in their aggressive activities. They're more aggressive. They start to be aggressive at 3 months, gradually increases, and then they peak at about 5 months where there's a well-established hierarchy. And you've got turkeys for anywhere from, 4 to 6 months, depending on what breed and what size you're trying to raise them up to. So learning, song, memory, those are the things that we've talked about today. I did want to share a little bit more about the brain of the bird, which isn't too different from ours. Mammals, birds, reptiles, and we are mammals, humans are mammals, we have the same basic five parts. You've got the cerebellum, which is for balance. You've got the hindbrain, which goes down at the back of the head, and then it goes into the spinal cord. Then you've got the midbrain, the thalamus, and the cerebrum. And these are the same basic parts. You've got birds that you can look up online that show mimicry. Some learning does take place, but auditory learning is the ability to form memories of the sounds that you hear and associate those sounds with objects or living things in your environment. So think of your dog, if you have a dog or a cat. If you teach them sit, doesn't matter what language you're speaking. It could be Spanish, it could be Japanese, it could be English. They're going to learn the meaning of that sound, sit. Dogs aren't born knowing what human words mean. They cannot imitate the sounds that we make. They can't say sit themselves. But parrots and some songbirds can use vocal learning and auditory learning to mimic the sounds that we make. Good examples, like I said, were the lyrebird. Another one is the African gray parrots, Amazon parrots, minor birds. That's it. I could not think of minor bird all of a sudden. Those are all birds that they don't necessarily understand what they're saying, but they are mimicking those sounds. Hopefully they know what no means, because sometimes we as owners say it often enough, they do. Some of our chickens know what no means. But if anyone is really into bird song, there are some great books out there. They have associated CDs that come with songs on them to supplement the material that's written in the book. I can recommend also a good DVD that does a fairly good job of going through song, and that's the Life of Birds series by Richard Attenborough. They do a pretty good job of doing like an introductory ornithology class all in the span of a few hours. And they get to go all over the world with places I wish I could go to really make their points. But there you have it, Andy. Were there any questions? I can't seem to get into the chat room today and really see what people are writing, but were there any questions that came up?
Hello? Hello?
Oh, dear. This is not good.
Dr. McCray?
Oh, there you are.
Yep. I was trying to have the ability on the switchboard to screen a caller while we're still live on the air to go over and talk to them and see if they have a question for you. And I rarely ever do it, so I was trying to remember how to do that because I think we have a caller in queue that would like to ask you a question.
Well, we can see.
Let's see here. Okay.
No matter what I tried to do, I'm not getting into your chat room today.
Yeah, it's kind of gotten kind of choicey. A caller calling in from area code 508. 508. You're on the air. Do you have a question for Dr. McCray? Maybe not. Caller, they're live. Let's try it again.
Hello.
Caller calling.
Oh, I hear someone.
State your name and tell us what state you're calling from, please. Okay, maybe not. Maybe they just wanted to call and listen in today, but they had pressed 1 to talk with the host, so maybe not. Maybe they got live on air. They got chicken all of a sudden, but nonetheless. But okay, so great. Any last information you want to share?
Well, no, if people are interested in turning this into, like, say, a science fair project, there's great websites where you can learn about bird songs in your area. Like the Cornell Ornithology Lab has a great website. But, if you wanted to take a look at the crowing frequency, if you have multiple roosters, that's a good one for a science fair project, or how many contact calls you get during certain hours of the day, that's another good science fair project. How many of your Wyandottes make calls versus how many of your Rhode Island Reds make calls during certain times of the day, and tracking that kind of information and reporting that. Could be that you have a very vocal breed, like a Homburg, versus a very quiet breed. And you want to, use that as a science fair project. That might be a good idea for someone to record data on.
Very cool. Yep. And using agriculture in the classroom. Gotta love it. Jen got voted Teacher of the Year for doing a lot of that back at her school when she was teaching full time. So that sounds like a great science project to me. Looks like when you're coming back here in a couple of weeks, we'll be talking about poultry research translated. You'll have some studies you'll share with us and be able to translate those studies to our bird brain layman's terms so we can understand them.
Hey, the bird brain is pretty complex, so hey.
We heard about that today. Actually, we did. Amazing. So, awesome topic today. We'll be sharing that. Of course, if you tuned in late and missed part of it, don't worry. All shows are archived for your listening pleasure 24/7 at iTunes.com, podcast.com, Zoom.com. And, of course, you love it when Dr. McCray is on the show twice a month. So you're going to want to make sure you subscribe to Chicken Whisperer Magazine because she's one of the dream team contributors. And she's got a couple of articles coming up here in the spring issue, one all about coops and one about comparing a couple of different breeds for pastured poultry. And very interesting. So, Dr. McCray, thank you very much for joining us today. As always, it's a pleasure, and we'll look forward to having you back in a couple of weeks. Have a great week.
You take care. Bye-bye, everybody. Thanks.
Bye-bye. All right, that's going to wrap up another great episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. I hope you all have an absolutely fabulous weekend with family and friends. It's going to be a busy weekend for us after 4 months hanging out in South Florida, enjoying this wonderful weather, meeting some new people and friends. We're going to be packing up and pulling the RV on out onto the road, 75, heading north, heading up to Atlanta for kind of a staging area for about 10 days before we hit the road on our Power to the Poultry book tour with Tractor Supply. And don't forget about next Thursday. You'll get email reminders if you signed up and registered for that big national webinar coming up next Thursday, the 27th, about keeping you and your flock healthy from disease with both the CDC and the USDA and myself, the Chicken Whisperer. So hope you have a wonderful weekend with family and friends. Reminder, no show Monday. We will be on the road, and I'll post on our Facebook page when the next broadcast will be. So thank you very much for tuning in today, and God bless everybody. Ha ha ha.